Hi everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today are Mark.
Hello.
And Tucky.
Hi.
Tucky sounds really enthusiastic to be here today.
I am. I was being coy Tucky.
You were being coy Tucky, so you were being fish Tucky. Is this a result of watching Lou over the wall?
Yeah. It's like being massaged centrally. This is the aftermath of a central loo over the wall massage.
We'll talk more about that later. I don't know how to follow that. Let's follow it with Batman. Now, it's probably the worst kept secret in comic books and in media anyway, that Batman is basically a ninja. Isn't he?
Pretty much.
Well, it's in the live action movies. He was made out to be a ninja of the whole League of Assassins thing, wasn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, Batman is basically a ninja with a cape. Yeah,
yeah.
And that's he always has been. You know, he just happens to fight crime instead. But most of what he does is, you know, spying on people, which is what
it is. Detective Comics. Yeah. He was a detective,
exactly, and. It's weird how Batman is more true to kind of the ninja way of doing things than most ninja things that came out of Japan. And America, let's be fair, because I watched Sakura Killers during the 80s. Do not watch that movie.
It's pretty much the gold stamp of go and Google it now.
I know, that's why I'm telling people don't watch it, because I know they will, and I know they'll regret it, because it's got multicolored ninjas. It was Power Rangers Ninja Force before Power Rangers was even a thing.
Oh, no.
You got a guy who's a ninja who's going under the ground. He's tunneling using ninjutsu. So, anyway, Batman Ninja. We've finally seen the trailer for that. What did you guys think? I'm going to let you guys field this first before I give my thoughts.
I was just going to say it was interesting. I don't think I've seen a Batman quite like it quite yet. But, yeah, it was interesting. I'd probably enjoy it for what it is. It just looked daft as out. But also quite serious, because it's Batman. That's about all I could get from the trailer. I'm not hugely into Batman. I was like, I can recognise some of the characters. I noticed there was a Harley Quinn and a Two-Face in there. But I really like the designs on the characters and how they've changed them to fit the ninja world. And I don't mean ninja world as in like Naruto world. I mean like classic old world Japan.
I'm just amazed that you mentioned Harley Quinn and Two-Face, but didn't mention the Joker, who was kind of prominent.
Grodd was in there, Smoking Monkey.
Yeah, Grodd was in there, but
I don't even know who Grodd is.
Gorilla Grodd.
I was like, is this a Batman thing? Maybe. I don't watch enough Batman to know who he is.
He lives in Gorilla City, which is located somewhere in Africa. It's a city that is inhabited by advanced, technologically superior gorillas.
Oh. He had telepathic powers gained from being mistreated in a lab.
Yep.
So when you're using the Pantene Pro V for that extra shine on gloss on your hair, that was like the aftermath. It's like, yeah, you can have shiny hair, but we've got homicidal telepathic gorillas now.
Yeah.
Just like in Planet of the Apes.
It's a veritable cavalcade of Batman villainy and some DC villainy as well. What did you think, Tucky?
I tell you what, the Joker makes a great villain, doesn't he? Feudal Japan villain, more Joker, definitely. That's just from the trailer as well. But, you know, it's a typical, it's like he's being sent back to feudal Japan. There's a few costume changes here and there. It's highly stylized. And every time there's a Mech in Japan reference, an alarm goes off. But it's feudal Japan with Batman. The people who design the characters and the costumes will have a whale of a time, but at the end of the day, the plot just looks like a usual Batman versus Joker.
Yeah, when they were flashing up on the trailer, the names of specific people, a couple of things stood out for me. I'm not holding out any hope for the screenplay, because I'm not a big fan of Gurren Lagann, I'll be honest. And I know that there are fans of Gurren Lagann out there who want to stare at me in, what's the word? In discontent. You know, they'll be discontented with me. Well, tough. go watch more anime. Go watch Giant Robo, The Day the Earth Stood Still. That's kind of like the spiritual older brother of Gurren Lagann. You won't be disappointed. But yeah, it's the screenplay is by the guy who did the screenplay for Gurren Lagann and Kill la Kill, which I absolutely cannot stand. And I don't know why so many people rate it so highly.
Because it was one of those series that was in the right place at the right time and came straight after Attack on Titan. So like, oh, anime is new. Oh, I've never seen something like this before. Yeah, I love this.
Oh, anime is new. Oh, look, it's got very little in the way of storyline, actual plot development. It's got very little in the way of actual character development. Oh, look, it's a schoolgirl wearing very little, and in the final couple of episodes is completely naked, but it's okay because they're fighting for something.
I was waiting for the very little in the way of clothing.
You know. I will someday finish Kill la Kill.
So all I'm going to say to that is, all of you Kill la Kill fans, good job.
You're the reason they're putting so much fan service out, you douches. Stop buying it. Watch it in private. Don't let the people know that sex sells.
Well, I keep saying this, right? If the fan service is warranted, then you should be happy to sit there and watch that with your parents. If you aren't comfortable to sit there and watch a particular show with your parents, then there's something wrong with the show. It's that simple.
Should I put Prison School on for me parents? to be honest, I don't think I could get away with putting any anime on with me parents. So.
Oh, no, you could. You could. There are shows that your parents would be fine with. And the Ghibli stuff, for example.
I'd try getting them to watch Your Name. They wouldn't even watch that.
Yeah, because Your Name is like a slice of life type thing. Give them something that's totally outlandish and totally fantasy, like, Princess Mononoke. Something that is pure escapism for them.
Stick camphor on for them.
Got this amazing new series. It's called Keijo. It'll never happen in real life.
No, go with camphor. It's an amazing new series. It's German.
That's Girls and Panzer on.
There you go. You like all the old war movies, Father? Here, have a look at this.
Speaking of war movies, we're actually going on to talk about Dragon Ball, which normally I don't like doing, but this time I think we have to.
The science of Dragon Ball.
Yeah, so what has Toriyama been doing lately?
Well, in a recent interview, he's revealed that Saiyans, to become the powerful Super Saiyans, they need to have enough S cells.
So if they don't have enough S cells, do they have to harvest S cells from other Saiyans?
Possibly. They might have to drink more vitamin S.
Or is it like, you know, like those protein shakes that bodybuilders keep drinking? Is it like that? New S cell, S shake. So it's just Vegeta in the gym going, I like S shake. It's tasty and it's good for my muscles.
What does the S stand for? Semen.
That's what I was going to say. Is it very salty? Most Saiyans have some S cells, although not a great quantity.
After what Tucky's just said.
That's one of the reasons why Goku and Vegeta's kids become Super Saiyans is that they inherited these cells. They have the genetic makeup to become Super Saiyan. They got their S cells from their parents. Of course they did.
Oh. Right. See, this is the frustrating thing. One, he didn't need to tell us the science of Dragon Ball. It's fighting, it's Goku, it's food, now and then. That's all it is.
He's basically... all he's done with this is he's done Highlander 2 and The Phantom Menace combined. Because do you remember the original Highlander movie? You had a bunch of immortals running around the planet, killing each other, cutting each other's heads off, all for this mysterious prize. Yeah?
Yeah.
And it worked. It was pure fantasy, you know? Sword and sorcery stuff. And it worked. That was fine. Highlander finished. Connor McLeod won. It's not a spoiler, by the way. The film's been out for coming on 40 years. If you haven't seen it by now, you're probably not going to watch it. But
it's been remade a few times as well, hasn't it?
No, it's not been remade. They just tacked on sequels and then did like the TV series with Duncan MacLeod, who was also apparently... I don't understand. But anyway.
I've got one question, and this is something that somebody asked in one of the tweets that on the news article we're looking at.
Yeah.
If you need S cells to become Super Saiyan... how come Cell wasn't a Super Saiyan?
Yeah.
It actually was Cells.
He's literally cells. He's literally made of S cells.
Yeah,
he should be the embodiment of pure S cell.
And that also means that Goku, that nobody could have beaten him. None of the Saiyans could have beaten him.
Yeah, it just doesn't.
It doesn't make sense. But this is what I mean when I say that he's basically, he's done a Highlander 2 Phantom Menace job on it. Because Highlander 2 turned around and said, oh, these immortals are actually aliens. They were rebels from the planet Zeist and they were exiled to Earth and forced to fight each other. Like, what? What did you just do to one of my favourite movies? And then the Phantom Menace came along and basically dropped its kegs and decided to squat over the Star Wars franchise with and pour out a big swirly of midichlorians.
I've just got this image now of some hentai artist who's going to have a picture of Goku being tied up while Vegeta is extracting the S-cells from his body.
I've got a Kira Toriyama teabag in the fans, but what is that right now? It's awful. It's awful. You don't need to tack on something. There's something that's like, it's already set. It's got fans. Why are you trying to add lore to it?
No.
Add it at the beginning and then try and explain it later when you like realize, like, oh, I said this when I was drunk. I'll have to explain it now.
No, I think this is tactics, right? I've said it so many times. I honestly think Toriyama is sick to the back teeth of Dragon Ball, right? I think he honestly wants to do something else. I have this sneaking suspicion, and I think this is another card he's played to try and make the franchise unpalatable so he can stop doing it.
Well, the thing is, he trivialised it in this whole Battle of the Universes thing, right? Because in the new episodes, there's Universe 6 Saiyans, and there's one lass, Cauliflower, or whatever the hell vegetable she is. And she's like, it's like, oh, do you want to learn how to be Super Saiyan? Goku's went through trials and tribulations and that. For her, it's like, oh, gather all the energy in the like back of your neck, and then you become Super Saiyan. It's like, oh, great, a bit of yoga could have done instead of having a whole planet demolished.
Hang on. Gather all the energy in the back of your neck.
Yeah, it's like I'm assuming all these S cells. Now we know what these little yellow like power things are, just gather them all at the back of your neck, and bang, I'm Super Saiyan. And then she goes Super Saiyan level 2. In knee time at all.
The thing is, that whole idea of gathering all the power in the back of your neck is kind of stupid. Because Dragon Ball is supposed to be based on certain elements of cultivation, you know, especially from like wuxia stuff. So you have like the various meridians on the body, various things like that. That's basically where Toriyama got a lot of his ideas from, which is why the original Dragon Ball is, you know, it's very much in certain ways like Journey to the West, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, even Goku is modelled on the Monkey King. So, that whole idea of gathering all the power in the back of your neck is kind of stupid. You gather all the power kind of in the pit of your stomach's torso area and basically then explode it from there, because that's how martial artists do it.
Oh, back of the neck for Universe 6. And then their progression, just to get up to the level that Goku is, just so they can have this one, like, half-decent fight. You know, it's like, oh, let's skip the whole going through anger, going through years of training. Just gather up in your back of your neck and you're good to go. And that annoyed the hell out of me. It's like, I invested so much time watching Goku lose his rag, our Krillin being blown up on Namek. And a lot of us would get sitting there going, oh, what's going on? What's going on? Bang, Super Saiyan. And that was like time invested for him just to turn around in like 10 minutes and show this last, like, not only surpassed Super Saiyan, but gone Super Saiyan 2. And it's like, however, 300 odd episodes for us to watch this progression of Goku, like, you know, in little bits.
Yeah, but Tucky, that's,
this last can surpass him in like 10 minutes.
But that's what I mean. That's poor writing. And that's why I think that's basically why I think Toriyama is sabotaging Dragon Ball. I honestly think he's sick of it. And so far, nobody's actually pointed to anything involving Dragon Ball that proves me wrong. People keep coming out with reasons why Dragon Ball should continue and why Dragon Ball is still good in their eyes, but nobody's ever actually refuted what I'm saying.
It hasn't aged well. They should have left it where it was. And the thing is, if this was so good, then why the hell go for GTA first? You know, why not instead of like rushing into something like GTA, say, let's sit down, let's take a year or two, and let's come back and, like, you know, stay in the 90s where it will be relevant.
You know what it is? It's money. And it's weeb nostalgia. Or weebstalgia.
Weebstalgia. Speaking of nostalgia and science.
Yes.
Oh, dear God. I've been watching two series.
Okay, what have you been watching?
I've been watching The Magic School Bus and The Magic School Bus Rides Again.
Okay, this requires a little bit of explanation, don't you think, Tucky?
Yep, I'm waiting, I'm all ears.
So, I finished watching Stranger Things 2 the other day.
Okay.
Decent series. I started watching Little Witch Academia, which seems okay from the first one or two episodes I watched. The other day when I went on Netflix, it went and recommended me something. The Magic School Bus and The Magic School Bus Rides Again. Why? Because I liked anime. Because, of course.
So, you went from Stranger Things to Little Witch Academia, and then Netflix recommended you The Magic School Bus?
Rides Again. The reason I watched The Magic School Bus, the original one, is to see how good it was compared to the new one. Because, dear God, Rides Again is an abomination to mankind. I've actually wrote notes down for this one while I was watching it, and I've literally just wrote in a couple of letters,
oh,
an abomination to mankind.
No, Tucky, this is a sign of how much Mark hated this, the fact that he was taking notes.
Oh, dear God.
It's just this list. Nah, no, no, no.
Go on then, Mark. Let's start this list. Let's crack out.
So, dull, lacking animation, barely anything visual on the screen. It's just kind of the characters are just standing looking at each other. Very, very, very bland designs for both the characters, the backgrounds, everything. It's called The Magic School Bus, but it was lacking any kind of magic that the name would suggest.
But they deliver on the school bus.
It does have a school bus. But the school bus is a lot more boring than the previous one, because in the previous one, in the opening, the school bus is like dancing around, looking all groovy and all 90s, whereas this is just a bus with eyes. Kind of like a car from Cars.
Does the bus travel to like space and inside your body and, you know, over the hills and valleys and stuff like that?
Oh yeah, it still goes all over the place, but it just seems a lot more boring in transformation as it did back then. Back then it used to get like jet engines and shrink down and have claws and all kinds. This is just kind of it's just a bus. So what do you want? It's a school bus. We're not going to like have anything magical in this.
We only get so much in the education budget.
That's it. Education cuts a bit hard.
But that's one of the things. I mean, the original Magic School Bus, you kind of got something out of it. I mean, the stuff it taught you was basic. But this, they're kind of just like, yeah, you might as well just look it up on Wikipedia. There's literally no point in going on magical school trips. One of the characters even has a tablet and just goes, oh yes, look, it's even on this information here. And I'm just like, you've been traveling to the Galapagos Islands and you literally just went, I've looked it up on Wikipedia. So what's the point in going to the Galapagos Islands? What's the point in the magic school bus if you just look it up on Wikipedia? But yeah, continuing its long list of crimes, devoid of any personality outside of Arnold, which is the glasses kid from the original series.
Okay.
I remember him.
Yeah. He still
always travel sick, even though he loved going on the bus, but he was always travel sick for some reason.
So yeah. Is this the Arnold who then went on to become Hey Arnold in Hey Arnold?
Possibly. He might have fell down and like bumped his head like really bad that he got a football head, but I think we're going to decide that's a different Arnold.
Okay.
Well, to see how bad this is for the first episode, they spent half the episode complaining about, well, not even complaining, they're boasting about how nothing changes and how they don't like change.
Hang on. I thought this was the magic school bus, not the magic old age pensioner bus.
Exactly. They are saying how they don't like change, whereas they've got a magic school bus.
I don't like change. Get off my land.
It's like, don't want anything to change. We've got a magic school bus that might take us to faraway places. But we don't like that.
We don't like our minds being broadened by travel.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we're fine with it. Oh, it's like, what? You're kind of sending two messages here. Almost immediately after how they say they don't like change, a new character, and there's a new transfer student, and they're just like, all right.
Oh, are they foreign or of some different religion denomination of sorts?
I couldn't really tell. All of the characters, except for Arnold, are kind of just the same. There's no personality quirks or anything with them. Unlike the original series, where you kind of had like the class clown, you kind of had like a few like smart kids and other stuff. These are just kind of like, yes, we like school. School is great. Yeah.
You really hate this, don't you?
Honestly, there's such a lack of enthusiasm whatsoever in it.
I've got to ask.
The new kid sees the magic school bus. They don't have any idea of what it is, and they just like react just like any other kid would when they see a magic school bus. Yay!
I've got to ask, what sort of age range is the magic school bus aimed at?
I don't know. I don't think it's aimed at anybody. Because I thought that the idea would be that it would be aimed at the same people who liked the original one. But it seems even dumber than that. And I can't imagine anything like that. I mean, even the characters, like they changed the original school teacher into another one.
Oh, no, Miss Frizzle.
Yeah, Miss Frizzle is now Professor Frizzle, and she gives up the magic school bus because, of course, you would. I mean, you're now a professor. Why would you ever need a magic school bus anymore?
Hang on, is she now a crazy professor with wild hair who leads children off on adventures through time and space?
Well, in the last episode I saw her in, she was kind of just flying around on a scooter.
No, I was going to say that that's either the new version of Doc Brown or the Doctor.
But no, it's just so bland and so boring. I mean, there's literally no fun in the series. Like the original one, that had the background stuff. They had the background was all animated. This is all just static and boring. There's literally no charm whatsoever.
I have to jump in here, right? Because I know the Magic School Bus is aimed at a much younger audience than we are. Much, much younger.
Oh,
yeah.
Scholastic, wasn't it? The old school thing.
Yeah, we're talking primary school level. We're not even talking like secondary school. We're talking primary school. Low primary school as well. So probably around 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
5, 6, 7 years old, I'd say. Possibly even 4. The thing is, that's one of the reasons why they kept things simple, but I hate to put it this way, and there are people who are going to shout at me for saying this because a lot of people don't actually realise, but as a species, humanity is nowhere near as intelligent as it was 50 years ago. We know a lot more, but the majority of humans don't know how to apply what they know.
Yeah.
And that's basically a sign of intelligence. Application of knowledge is one of the fundamental building blocks of intelligence. So 50 years ago, we were technically, you know, in terms of our capacity, we were more intelligent. We might know more now, but we're nowhere near as intelligent.
Well, this is true. I mean, even in the series, it's like the original one, the kids fought for themselves, they've shown what they learned. I mean, there's a whole thing in the first episode of the original series where they kind of have to find the teacher and they kind of have to solve riddles. This literally, everything is held, like, it's just handed to them on the plate. It's just, like, it's just given to them as information.
Yeah.
But there's, literally nothing challenging about it.
The thing is, it comes down to, do you remember the game shows that used to be on when you were a kid? Think about it.
Strike it Rich.
Not those ones, the ones for kids.
Oh, all right.
The ones for kids. I mean, when I was a kid, there was Nightmare. But these days, if you went to a TV executive and say, right, I've got this idea for a game show. We have a creepy guy wearing old medieval clothes, and it'll be virtual reality based, and we'll have two kids sitting in a room, and they'll be trying to guide this one kid who's basically blindfolded through various challenges. And they go, no, we're not doing that. That sounds too risky. We'll get in trouble.
I was thinking some B-rated, like, you know, extras who will give them as, like, major actor roles and none of them get background checks.
Yeah.
So it adds to the creepiness.
Yeah. If you're wondering what show we were talking about a show that used to be on TV, which I used to love watching, called Nightmare.
It was a really good show.
It was.
I do remember that one as well.
Thing is, I'm amazed that now with today's level of gaming and VR being a thing, I'm amazed that they haven't brought it back.
I think they'd ruin it, just like they did with Pat Sharp's Funhouse.
Yeah, I don't know. The Crystal Maze has been all right.
Yeah, it's been all right.
But then again, I think part of that is down to Richard Ayoade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But every time I hear him, all I hear is his Neo York, your voices.
Yeah, don't go.
Kiss her, you magical bastard.
So one more thing about the Magic School Bus rides again, because we're really flogging this dead horse right now.
Yeah.
The new teacher, I don't know. She seems a bit of a sadist.
Here we go.
Sorry, what?
There's literally a scene in the first episode where she nearly gets a child killed.
What?
She laughs it off and just goes, oh, well, I haven't had any children die this time. Probably.
What?
It was a joke. I was just like, really? You're just laughing off that this child nearly died under your care? I was just like, I mean, I know it was odd. I know he's been a bit of like a whingy kid like he always is, but it doesn't mean that he like had to die. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just like one of these characters where it's just really trying to be cool and really cringy comedy.
Oh.
But they're going, oh, you've nearly died. Well, I've never lost a child so far. This year, probably.
Leave no child behind.
You're going to die.
That's what they signed the forms for. They know what they're getting into.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we leave that to shall we leave the Magic School Bus in the dust and head over to Academy City, where the older students go?
Yes.
Heading from one institution of education to another, but this time it is Academy City. And if you're an anime fan, then you've probably heard of Academy City. It's one of those cities that is basically a giant school. And it's also the location for all of the action that takes place in a certain magical index and a certain scientific railgun. And today, I am going to grace you with a certain magical index, the movie, The Miracle of Endymion.
Ooh.
Yes.
Endymion.
Yes, Endymion.
Endymion.
This movie kind of takes place, I think it was in between the first season and the second season. I think that's where it is in the timeline, but don't quote me on that because I might be wrong. But anyway, this movie starts off with a ship in orbit, right? And it's one of those orbital planes. It's basically transporting people from A to B because this is the future. And it's kind of a solid vision of the future because that's what people are getting to now, orbital space planes that basically fly out of the atmosphere, go into orbit, and then just basically land somewhere. That's the new age of air travel. But something happens, and there's an accident, and things go wrong, and the plane it loses an engine, and it's coming into land hard, and then a miracle happens. But you know right at the beginning, they actually show you right at the beginning, because it says 88 people survived, but then you see the bloody pilot's seat, and you think, hang on, the windows are smashed in. Where's the pilot? They said 88 people survived, but you know the pilot probably didn't survive given the damage in the cockpit and all of the blood. But there were only 88 people on board. So the first mystery is, why were there only 88 people on board? Because that was the passenger count and 88 people survived. So what's gone on there? Then it shifts to Toma Kamijo, who is the protagonist for all of the index side of things. Railgun is basically Misaka, and, you know, because she is the railgun. But Toma is basically walking around with Index, and Index is doing her usual thing, and there's a cracking scene, right? And I love this scene because it was hilarious in how it presented it. Toma is explaining about the orbital elevator, the space elevator, which has been built. And Index is going, where is it? And Toma points to it, he goes, it's over there. And she goes, oh, I've never seen that before. And he says to her, it's been there all this time. It was there, and then it flashes through different bits from the first season of Railgun and the first season of Index. Bits where Index is in the scene, and in the background, you have the space elevator. It's like, it was there when you did this, and it was there when you did this, and it was there when you did this. She goes, oh. Thing is, it's a mundane joke, but the way it's presented just had me giggling because it was just funny.
Yeah.
And I know I'm kind of going into a little bit, but this is all at the beginning of the movie. I'm not going to spoil the rest of the movie. They hear somebody singing, and they see a pink-haired girl called Arisa, and she's singing a song. What they don't know is that there is a big mystery, because Arisa is a simple girl who wants to sing in front of loads of people. She's got dreams of being a singer, and people seem to like her songs, and she's quite talented. But there is a big thing that's going on. Somebody is trying to use a very large magic spell in Academy City, where all the science is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit of foreshadowing right at the beginning, because Index says that the space elevator is a bit like the Tower of Babel, and right. Things develop from there. Now, this kind of is one condensed story arc from a certain magical index. It could easily slot into anywhere in the Certain Magical Index Season 1 or Season 2. The fact that they've done it as a movie, and it's nice and compact, it runs really well. The pacing is pretty good overall. Characters are exactly what you'd expect if you've seen any of the series or any of the Railgun series. Academy City is exactly as anyone who's watched the series or is a fan of the series will remember it. The issues kind of come with the story, and over the course of the movie, you wonder how these things have come to pass. How did these things happen? And it's interesting because it's right at the very end of the movie when the leader of Academy City is talking to the leader of the church. I think it's the church. When they're having a conversation, and he basically puts it forward that this is the reason why this possibly happened, but neither of them can fully explain it. It's like Thomas' right hand, and I know that sounds dodgy, but in the story, he has what's effectively known as God's right hand. He can nullify any magic, any kind of energy, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't explain how it works. They don't know why he's got it. They don't know how it functions. All they know is that it just is.
Right.
Kind of the same with the character who's central to this, which is Arisa, because I've already mentioned her. It's kind of like that with what she has. And I'm not going to say what that is. In terms of animation, the animation quality is very good overall. There's some really good effects work done. The music is interesting choices, I'd say. They work, but they're not kind of to my taste. It's a bit too techno in times for my taste. The character designs are generally what you'd expect. They're exactly what you want from this. They haven't really pushed the board out with anything. And then we come to always problem child. Always the problem child. The voice acting. Script is fine, right? Japanese version of the dub is fine. The American version of the dub, yeah. On the whole, the American version is fine. Except, again, it's the pronunciation of names that drives me crazy. It's Mikasa, not Mikasa. I'm not saying my house. I just want to put that out there. It's Mikasa. It's Toma, right? Not Toma.
Mm.
It's a little thing. I know it's a minor annoyance, but it's when that minor annoyance keeps happening. That's when it becomes frustrating. That's when you really want to question them and say, you know, just have a listen to how they pronounce it. Practice how they pronounce it. The correct pronunciation. It's right there in front of you. And I'm tired of saying that. So, yeah, you guys have been awfully quiet.
That's I haven't really watched much of. I watched Certain Index, a bit of that, but I kind of like just gave up on it.
I mean, this is
other things got me interest.
Yeah, this is basically a typical Index thing. I mean, there is a bit of fan service in there. There's one of the scenes where Arisa and Index are having a bath. There's one scene where there's a security group and they're riding these spider-type robots on wheels, and you have a shot straight down the butt of the female leader who's wearing basically some kind of plug suit type thing. So, yeah, that was an interesting angle to place the camera.
It's where the money is.
No. We are not making any commentary about money shots. Anyway.
That one shot there sells the DVD. So I've got a question, not really on the film itself,
yeah,
but on the overall series. So my question is, because it is, this must be what, the fifth one? I think there's two seasons of each one.
Yep.
Where do you start?
With a certain magical index.
Season one.
Yep. Start with that. Watch it in this order. This is probably your preferred order. A certain magical index, a certain type of scientific railgun, a certain scientific railgun S, then Miracle of Endymion, and then a certain magical index season two. I think that might be the better order. Because in a certain scientific railgun S, there is that crossover bit between Toma and Mikasa meeting for the first time and how he helps her with Vector. Which is one of the things that happens in season one of Index.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's the best way to watch it. If you're a fan of Index or Railgun, then it's highly recommended watching. If you've never seen any of them and you haven't understood a word I've said about anything, but you are curious, go watch a certain magical index. It's science versus magic in anime, and it's not bad.
So we've had two scientific series. What's Tucky going to bring to the table?
I'm bringing adventure with ducks.
Really? Is this Duck Hunt?
No, not Duck Hunt. DuckTales.
Oh, I thought you were going to go with Tailspin. Launchpad.
Launchpad is in this.
Oh, no, Tailspin was the Bears. Changes. Tailspin was the Bears, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're blue. He went from Jungle Book to pilot.
Just like everybody else.
Maybe that's how he ended up in the jungle. He was a bit like Tarzan. Oh, the bear version.
I'll tell you what, if he started off in the jungle and became a pilot, his career advisor deserves a raise.
Now, God, can you imagine the bear version of Tarzan? Bearzan, Lord of the Apes. And you got a giant bear running around the jungle pretending it's a chimp.
I just had this image of just like Baloo's like career just like skyrocketed. Much like in Tailspin, but I've just got this image of him just like doing rocket science now, just like this bear. It's like, how long have you been on the job? It's like, well, grew up in the jungle, flew up plane. This was the next logical step.
Moved on to the Russian cosmonauts. Came first bear in space. Then voiced by Bill Murray in live action.
So, anyway, DuckTales.
Woo. It's a hard habit, isn't it? Because everyone grew up with DuckTales, and then when Disney said, oh, we're going to re-release DuckTales, and then it's like, oh, it's going to be kind of new, but we have David Tennant. That was just enough to stop people from whinging. Yeah. Because it's one of their things, like, oh, they're remaking something from my childhood. I don't like it instantly. I've seen nothing or heard nothing of it apart from that it's getting a remake, but I'll sit here and type on the internet, oh, I can't believe they're making a remake. That kind of thing. But then they're like, oh, David Tennant's like, I'll give it a chance then.
Yeah, it's amazing how much mileage people get out of David Tennant.
He's like the Energizer Bunny, I've heard. But it's... David, he was in Tree Fu Tom.
Yeah, I know. It was weird.
From Tree Fu Tom to Scrooge McDuck.
I saw that in the credits for Tree Fu Tom. I was like, David Tennant?
He does get about it. He's decent. Like, he's like the intelligent Scottish voice actor. Not saying that the Scottish accent makes you sound dumb or anything, but it's like his comes off as like, oh, yes, I'm a learned Scotsman. I can't do the accent on. He's sort of softly spoken. It's kind of. Is Ewan McGregor Scottish?
Yes.
Because he's got like a slight twang of intelligence in his as well. Maybe we should get them together and have like a show called The Intelligent Scotsman.
No, because you know Connery would want to be involved in that. And you know Robert Carlyle would probably want to be involved in that as well.
Robert Carlyle wants to be in anything. He's desperate these days. But sticking with DuckTales before going on to the career options of Scottish actors.
What about what's-his-face who was in, McAvoy, James McAvoy? He'd definitely be in there, wouldn't he?
Stop writing stuff. Let somebody else invent that.
But no,
so we've got,
if we invent it, then they steal our idea. We can sue them.
Everyone steals our ideas. Everyone does.
Then
it's been proven.
Then let's
within a week,
sue them.
Within a week of a good idea on this show going out, and it's almost always done.
It's true. It's
so unfortunate. Think of a really, really obscure good idea and see if it happens.
No, Mark, don't go there. There was a period when we used to do the Geek Show and we used to say, no, this is not an idea for that guy who works with Tenga who's listening to this show right now.
Well, we've got our Girls in Gundam.
They actually did the Assorted Fruits one.
Yes, I know.
What a world. But trying to stick with DuckTales here, trying to stick with it. It's if anyone lived in the 90s and can remember waking up watching, well, if you had Channel 3, what was it, Digit? Saturday morning Digit?
I think that was what it was called.
Kat Deely launched her career on that show.
Yeah, but it's Kat Deely.
She was voted in. She won a vote, and look at where she is now. It's basically the Disney Channel for poor people, and they had the original DuckTales on there, and it was a decent show. It had a decent storyline, a lot of Scottish racism, a lot of Scottish racism, and they've kind of carried it over a bit to this new DuckTales 2017. They're calling it because DuckTales and it's 2017, but they've tried to reboot it with a new fresh edge. And to some extent it works, but it kind of loses a bit in the process. So far, I believe there's only 8 episodes out, and they're putting it up on Disney XD. And I've watched all 8 episodes, and there's an underlying story going that reintroduced you to Donald, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, who were his nephews, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah.
You get to see Scrooge McDuck again, and you're just reintroduced into, I don't know, it's like, I think the marketing for the people who used to like DuckTales more than like new, like children, because I've tried showing the bands and they kind of get their run, but they didn't care.
Yeah,
they're not Donald's there, and Donald's a sailor duck.
Yeah,
and but they had this new interesting angle. What if we had like a bit of mystery where Donald and Scrooge used to be adventurers in the olden days. Kind of played that angle. It's like, oh, who's that with it? It's like, Mom? It's like, the mother was in on it as well. And that's it. And then they kind of like, don't go anywhere with that for the first 8 episodes. So you know that's coming. So you know you're going to find out who Huey, Dewey, and Louise Ma is somewhere down the line, if they ever, like, you know, do it.
What if it's actually Daisy, Donald's other half?
It's not.
Is it not?
Unless she's became more athletic. Because there's actual picture, and it's like kind of like a hidden secret, and they've got Webby in there, and Beakley, my God. So, like I say, a new one, they've done character redesigns. Huey, Dewey, and Louie, you can understand them all, they speak perfect English. Whereas like the old voice acting, we're like...
Hang on, when you say they speak perfect English, are you saying Huey, Dewey, and Louie walk in and go, Uncle Donald, I think that you're fine by shares. Yeah, I'm doing so well today.
it's kind of like that. It's understandable, whereas before it was like, I can't do it. I can't do it, seriously. It probably sounds like just me crapping my pants or something. But they have the kind of like raspiness to it. Yeah, they and that. Now they're just emo kids, streetwise emo kids who aren't emo.
I'll be honest, I've watched a bit of the new DuckTales, and I've got to say, I'm not a fan. There are some changes which I don't mind, but for me, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, the change for them just doesn't work for me. I prefer the original versions of them.
Before mobile phones and before tablets and before technology, they kind of really push like modern day into it. I mean, it's not such a bad thing because it's great to see modern day stuff in animation now, but they really push it as if it's like some kind of cool, edgy, cliquey kind of thing. That's like, no, it's just everyday things, but you're trying to overemphasize everyday things as something cool. There's one episode, where they do an internship with Mark Beeks, I'm assuming it's like Facebook founder.
Okay.
Rather than like actually say Zuckerberg, it's Mark Beeks. And that's like full of all the whole tech, like, oh yeah, he's a multimillionaire selling this, selling that. And it's like, oh yeah, he's became like an ultra billionaire. And they've still, at the side, they've got Scrooge and Glomgold Duck, McDuck. Who've still got like a couple of the old baddies in there, Although Glom Gold was more like a business rival, wasn't he? It was always who's the richest Scottish duck in the world? And it's kind of like that. It's updated, but it's like, yeah, we get it. You're updated. Way. Miss Beakley,
which I was
talking about before, but I kind of went off track. Miss Beakley is now a highly trained odd job person. Like, she could work for the Secret Service, but, you know, before it was just like, oh, remember your coat and scarf, Mr. Scrooge. And now she's like proper tactical support.
Oh, God.
See, she's trained in martial arts and she's a housekeeper as well.
See, this to me sounds genuinely horrifying and disturbing.
Ah, it's changed, man. It's changed. It's all right. It's all right. If they can do more with it, and I think they can pull it off. It's on the right tracks, but it's kind of like it definitely has swayed. It has become its own kind of like version. Yes, it's a reboot, and yes, it's DuckTales, but it's not like the old DuckTales, because the old DuckTales you were introduced to like the money bin and the Beagle Boys were always trying to rob the money bin. Now the Beagle Boys, there's more than three of them. There's like the whole family, and they've all got their own kind of like niche. I think there's like a mime branch of the Beagle Boy family.
Okay.
Where they're all just mimes.
I'm not sure how that works, but okay.
But that's that kind of thing. And they've got this, like the Huey, Joe and Louie, they've met this mysterious other girl duck. Can't remember her name because she's not that important to me. And she's got this kind of like underlying like evil, like, you know, she's going to do something wrong, regret it, and then join them later on.
So she's basically Terra from Teen Titans.
Yeah, she basically is. Actually, I think one of them would actually get out with her. But Webby's also kind of like Mrs. Beakley's sidekick. When I say sidekick? I don't know. She's been locked in the mansion all the time. And she's not actually like a McDuck, but she's fascinated by the McDuck history.
Are you sure Scrooge McDuck isn't just keeping her prisoner?
I'm kind of thinking that way, somewhere down the line, but it's like Beakley's like, no, you're not allowed to go out. And she's like, oh, but I want friends.
Is she wearing a necklet or a bracelet or an ankle bracelet of any sort?
I think she's wearing a necklace.
There you have it. It's obviously
Scrooge McDuck made his fortune from human trafficking.
Yeah, but he hasn't sold it because he likes her.
You're a keeper. No. You're a keeper, wee lass. Get in my dungeon.
Oh, so DuckTales, on the whole, do you recommend it?
I'd recommend getting into it, but whether it keeps its flavour for the rest of it, to be continued.
Okay, right. We're going to take on something else now, completely left field, and we're just deviating wildly this week. But we've all been watching Lou Over the Wall, which is Masaaki Yuasa, who directed The Night Is Short, Walk On Girl, and The Tatami Galaxy. It's his new film. And
It's weird saying his new film, and we've just done one of his new films as well.
Yeah, I know. Thing is, it's out in cinemas. When is it out in cinemas? 6th of December, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's getting a second release in cinemas.
Well, it's his first official UK release.
Technically, it was on Scotland Loves Anime for like the preview stuff.
Yeah, that was just
preview. It's official.
Its official release is 6th of December.
Releases the 6th, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting. So, I feel privileged. I've seen it before.
Yeah.
Honest, I don't have to spend more money when Christmas is coming really fast.
So, yeah, we've all watched it. Okay, let's get the obvious elephant in the room out of the way, or the obvious mermaid in the room out of the way. It is a lot like The Little Mermaid in certain parts.
And a bit of Ponyo.
And a bit of Ponyo, yeah. But yeah. Ponyo, again, was like Miyazaki. It was basically the Ghibli version of The Little Mermaid, wasn't it?
Yeah, kind of, yes.
And, okay, yeah, it takes some cues from Ponyo, but I think this is very much its own thing. Even with the comparison with The Little Mermaid, you know how Disney did their version of The Little Mermaid and that Ursula the Sea Witch and everything like that?
Mm-hmm.
It's weird because I thought Lou Over the Wall was much better at capturing that kind of darkness of spirit than Disney's version of The Little Mermaid and Ponyo were able to. I think Lou Over the Wall managed to do it in a much better way.
Yeah.
In what way do you mean darkness of spirit, though? Because
I'm talking about what happens when people realise mermaids are real.
Oh, yeah. How much of a dick humans can be.
Yeah, basically. But not just that. it also is a comment on how the main character, Kai, how he behaves during that period.
Mm-hmm.
But also how Yuho, the lass, how she behaves during that period. There are no kind of solid characters in this. There are no... Everybody has to progress. Everybody has to grow in this movie. And that's one of the reasons I like it. I think it's a marvellous film. I would say it's probably equal to Night is Short, if not slightly better.
I don't know. The storyline isn't as entertaining as Night is Short.
Yeah, personally, I felt the other way. I mean, I enjoyed both of them, but I feel Night is Short was a lot better.
See, well, that's on plot for me. I mean, the character development was good.
Yeah.
The animation style, obviously, you know, it's very similar. Great use of light. I also noticed with the... when they do, like, shooting with camera in live action, everything's, like, really centralized.
Yeah.
I noticed that while watching this, like, everything is centralized. There's very little... It's like it's done through a fisheye lens. No pun intended.
Yeah, the whole...
And it's very noticeable.
Yeah, it's like, it felt like everything was really following, so the viewer can sit and follow the like all the action. Nothing was really deviating from the side, or if it was, it wasn't the central focus.
Yeah.
Everything was very central as, the like, obviously the movement was going around, and there is a lot of movement in some of the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Dancing.
Well, the thing is, we commented, when we talked about Night is Short, we commented on the musical. And this is far more of a musical than Night is Short was, even though Night is Short actually had a musical in the movie, which turned it into a musical as an animated movie. Try and get your head around that later. But this was actually, I love the bits where everybody starts dancing, because it's so manic and there's so much energy.
It's very 1930s, 1940s Disney, like, over-the-top dancing with the feet flailing around like spaghetti on a boombox.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I went to see this at the cinema at Scotland Loves Anime, and you could see everybody, when that scene comes on, you could see everybody just kind of, like, getting in with it all.
Yeah.
The whole, like, all of those scenes were just absolute fantastic. They were so much fun just to sit and watch. And like you said, it was very 1930s, 1940s Disney or like Popeye and stuff like that, with how they were like they were interacting. Because it was very basic. A lot of the stuff in the film, the animation wise, was basic, but it was very effective in how they pulled it out.
I don't know if you guys noticed this, there was cel shaded animation in there.
Well, the film was actually made via Flash.
No, I know it was made by Flash. You know, we were talking about the Batman trailer earlier on, right? I didn't quite like the animation in it because it's cel-shaded CG all the way through. And yeah, okay, the character designs were great, but it seemed a bit overdone for me. Whereas the animation, the art style in Lou Over the Wall, I really liked that because there was a certain flow, a certain smoothness to it.
Yeah. I like to use the word flow because there was a lot of water in that as well, and there was a lot of scenes where everything was flowing and it just looked absolutely beautiful.
You know, we talked a lot around the movie.
It was. The fame and the feel of it actually did feel like water.
Yeah. We've talked a lot around the movie, but we haven't actually talked about what the movie is. What was the name of the town again? Was it Hinashi or Hisashi? I can't remember off the top of my head.
The main character?
No, the town.
Oh, I can't remember. It's been a long... Well, I'll say it's been long. It's been 8 weeks for me.
I didn't pay attention to the town. I paid attention to the folklore around the town. Because it's like a little harbour, like Bay City kind of thing. And it's cut off, kind of, by the huge wall.
Yeah, it was...
Hence the wall in the title. But it's the whole folklore around mer people and... people being taken away by merpeople, people being eaten. It's all been passed down and it's been over-exaggerated through time.
Yeah.
And then there was the whole Curse of Shadow as well.
That's what one of the things I liked about this was the fact that the mermaids weren't simply creatures that lived in the water. The mermaids had an element of vampirism about them.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting angle to take on mermaids. And it kind of reminded me of some of the stuff that Rumiko Takahashi did with the Mermaid Scar and Mermaid Forest.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of horror version of mermaids, which was interesting to me. I have to say, Lou as a character is adorable.
Yeah, she's definitely one of those cute younger sister type girls who doesn't really get annoying.
No, that, and I think that was the best thing. I think because she's so simple and everything's new to her, that night scene where Kai, the main character Kai, and Lou are walking around. Yes, I know she's a mermaid. You'll understand when you watch the film how she can walk around, right? But when they're walking around, she's just, you know, she's so innocent, but utterly charming at the same time.
Yeah. That thing where she's moving, that she's pretending to move the train as it goes along.
Yeah.
I still do that these days. Pretend I'm God and moving things. Most people are happy with the automatic doors and think they've got Jedi mind force powers. Not me. I like moving things. I see a crane with something, it's like, I'm building this. That's how I pass my time.
Yeah. I thought Kai was an interesting character. I did like certain aspects of it, of him, and I liked how he progressed. But I think that we could have done with a bit more information about his personal history, about what happened between his mum and his dad. Which,
yeah, I'd love to know where his ma is now as well.
Well, yeah.
Because we get is the move to Tokyo, the ma was a dancer, da was a musician. The dad moved back with him, back to the town, and got a job and became a square.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of the characters I felt, some of the characters did develop a lot, whereas other characters I kind of felt I would have liked to have seen them a little bit more. Like the girl who was on the radio.
Yeah.
She kind of just felt like she was kind of like pushed in the second half of the film.
Well,
it was just like, oh, well, we knew you were there in the background, but it's kind of like you're now like a main character now.
See, I'm the opposite on that. I think that was a nice bit of foreshadowing, because right at the beginning, Yuho and what was the other lad called? Was it Kenjo? Was it Yuho and Kenjo? I think it is. They were both very demeaning towards the young lady who was doing the voice thing, because she was doing it in a very methodical way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they had to, because of the echo reverberation.
Yeah,
to get it all out without it sounding bad, she had to do it in the way that everyone could understand, by pausing and after like every sentence or so.
Yeah. Kunio, sorry, not Kenjo. Kunio, that was his name. But the thing is, by the end of the movie, both Kunio and Yuho had to do exactly the same thing. And that's why I think it was a nice bit of foreshadowing. She wasn't really crowbarred in. It's just you got to see her face by the end of the movie. That was all it was from my perspective. But that wasn't so bad.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I really enjoyed the film, and what I enjoyed was how fun it was. I mean, we've talked about how like serious it got. Well, we kind of talked about the dark parts of it, but the kind of portray of the merfolk as dark characters. However, all of the merfolk that we see are really entertaining.
Yeah,
like we meet Lou's
father. Father is fantastic.
Yeah, and
I love when he turns up. He's just wearing a suit and a top hat.
So yeah, he's here from the Chamber of Commerce to help with the production line.
I like how they're doing nobody twigs on, and then later on they're just going, there's a giant fish walking around in the top hat. But even the dogs were a lot of fun in it. I really enjoyed how they kind of used all of like the merfolk in it and introduced them.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think that the dog bit was wonderful.
When it kind of goes full circle, where obviously he explains to Lou how the dogs were in the pound or the dog shelter because people don't care about them, and they kind of give them away, and it does go full circle towards the end of the film.
Yeah. The other thing I also like, though, was the usage of music. I think that the music side of things was one of this film's strongest points.
A great modern take as well. Using synthesizers and the voice synthesizing as well. Well,
not just that. I mean, Kai is not a typical musician, because there was that nice clash between Yuho and Kunio, who are kind of rock musicians. But if you remember, the instrument that Kai uses at the very end.
Ah, yeah, it's like a ukulele of sorts.
Yeah, it's more traditional than even the instruments that Yuho and Kunio were using. But Kai's normal instrument is one of those systems where you have loads of different buttons which do different drum beats, and you can remixers use them a lot. And so it was basically a laptop and this remix setup, and he was doing loads of remixing instead. That was his instrument.
And the thing is, when being a new musician, it did mean that he was like out of touch, because like the traditional like guitars and bass guitars, he was able to give critique on them and actually had a decent ear for it as well.
Yeah. There's one bit I loved about this movie, and that's when he discovers that his dad used to be a musician, because obviously his dad hasn't told him. And so when he shows that to his dad, he says, "You used to play music as well." And his dad's like, No, I didn't. No, do your homework," and then runs off.
Yeah, like it was near the end where all the drama's going off and that, and you just see Lou's father go absolute Chris Akabusi on it.
Yeah.
Just this giant flaming ball of shark, man, and a rage. And I was like, yeah, I like that.
The thing is, the other thing that I like about this, though, was how it kind of went full circle, because you had Kai's granddad and the strange old grandma with the spear. I love
Octopus Woman.
Yeah, Octopus Woman. I'm not going to say anything about how it goes full circle, but the bit with Kai's granddad in particular got me.
Yeah, that was really, really good.
It was so well done as well, wasn't it?
Wasn't it a bit comedic at the end as well?
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things where it's like you kind of guess more or less halfway through the film how that's going to play out. But it is a lot of fun in how they actually do it, and it is very emotional.
The thing is, you can kind of figure it out once a certain scene happens. It's easy to figure out. But before that, I'll be honest, before that, I was thinking that maybe the friendship between Lou and Kai is basically going to form a bridge, a connection between these two different races, which it does, but just not in the way that you expect.
Yeah.
Because initially, you're thinking, because there's all these legends about mermaids eating people and stuff like that, and then there's the curse of the Shadow Stone and everything like that, and there's all of that kind of history and mythology about mermaids. And then there's Lou, who is obviously innocent and obviously a child. So that's what got me thinking that maybe it's going to go this way, but then it didn't. It didn't go the way I expected.
Yeah.
That's one thing I love about Masaaki Yuasa's work. It never goes the way I expect.
No, it's one of those films where you kind of think, you like you said, you think that you know how it's going to end. You think that you know what this like the second half of the film is going to be like, but it is a lot different.
Yeah,
it's definitely one to watch. I mean, like you say, it's coming out in cinemas very soon, and I think it'd actually be worth the admission price.
I agree.
I've seen it once at the cinema. To be honest, I'm quite tempted to go again. I enjoyed it that much.
I think that this is definitely worth the price of admission. It's so well done, so well put together, and it's Masaaki Yuasa. I've got to say, if you're talking about Japanese movie directors who are at the height of their game at the moment, I know loads of people will immediately say Makoto Shinkai. Straight away they'll say him, or Mamoru Hosoda, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
People will go with them too, but I'll tell you, I honestly think Masaaki Yuasa is overshadowing both of them.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. To be honest, I mean, I've started watching some of his previous stuff. Tatami Galaxy, I watched that, and it's pretty quickly became one of my favourite anime. It's absolutely fantastic.
It is superb, isn't it?
It's fantastic, and it really puts makes you think about stuff as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get into that more in depth at some other point, but yeah, honestly, I would say out of the stuff I've watched in general, all of his stuff I've really enjoyed, and I can't wait to see more from him.
Yeah. Do you know the weird thing? I get very strong Satoshi Kon vibes from Masaaki Yuasa's work.
Yeah.
I think more in terms of kind of mentality and the angle of approach to certain subjects, more so than the actual finished product itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge Satoshi Kon fan, as you guys know. We covered a lot today.
We have.
We are at the end of the show, so we're going to leave you for this week. Only a couple of weeks left until Christmas. We'll actually be taking a break for the Christmas period on the 15th of December. So that'll be our Christmas special. So look out for it. Keyframe is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and all of our shows are available on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, and various other places on the internet. And if you're listening through any podcast provider, then subscribe. It'll keep you up to date with all of the shows on our network. We also have a YouTube channel where we have various video game reviews and interviews with interesting people that we've met in various places like EGX and SonyCon and places like that. We have a Patreon, so if you're a regular listener and you enjoy what you're hearing, more importantly, then show your support. We could do with the money. It'll keep us going. We can eat meat.
We've also got Twitter as well.
Yes, we've actually finally got our own Twitter. So, follow us on Twitter. We'll keep you updated with some interesting stuff, what we're watching, and also we'll find some tasty AMVs for your viewing pleasure that you might not have seen.
We'll find some many tasty things.
Yeah, we cover all sorts of animation, and I'm forever finding interesting short animations. So those will be posted on our Twitter feed as well. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, either at The Geek Show or on Keyframe.
Keyframe Twitter handle is at Keyframe Podcast.
There you go, what Mark said. So, yeah, that's us for this week. Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Mark.
And I've been Tucky.
We shall see you all later. That was a very smooth I have been Tucky.
Yeah, it's been a smooth dear. Now I'm smoothing myself away because Donna's got a chicken kebab.